Less than 24 hours, Georgians will be under a shelter-in-place order.
McDonald, though, said he did not know the man was handcuffed and was trying to use his foot to pin him to the ground so he could be handcuffed.
If your friends, neighbors, or local organizations are not complying, report them to us.
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Free Georgia Podcast. My name is Jake Green. Thank y'all so much for joining me today. We've got a fantastic interview lined up today. Had a great time talking with this lady, and she will definitely be back on the podcast at some point. But before we get to that, if you have any questions about the Libertarian Party of Georgia or the Libertarian Party in general, you can go to lpgeorgia.com to learn all about our party and what we're doing around the state to spread freedom and liberty. You can look into running for office. You can sign up for things like Liberty Watch. You can submit a blog post. You can do all sorts of stuff on there. You can also take the world's smallest political quiz to see where you land on the political spectrum. Highly recommend. It's a great resource. We also hold events that are listed in here. Events right there. And it's always changing. There's always new stuff popping up. I highly recommend you signing up for Liberty Watch. It'll tell you all the legislation that is possibly going to pass in the state of Georgia. So it'll be a legislation that affects you and your family and your loved ones here in Georgia. If you happen to be watching this and you don't live in Georgia, you can go to lp.org. to learn more about the national party, and you can find your state affiliate from there. That'll do it. All right, y'all. My guest for today is Miss Mariana Davidovich. She is the Chief External Affairs Officer for the Foundation for Economic Education. Her resume is ridiculous. She has done so many things. She is a massive advocate for homeschooling and unschooling, which is the primary reason we brought her on today. But I had an absolutely wonderful conversation with her, and I hope that you enjoy it. So without further ado, Mariana Davidovich. All right, Mariana Davidovich, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jake?
Good, good. I actually know another Davidovich here in Atlanta. Her name's Elizabeth.
That's my sister.
Is it really?
Yeah, she's a stunt woman.
Yes.
That's my sister.
No way.
Yes.
She and my wife are close friends.
You're kidding.
We're not close friends, but they're friends. My wife she's a stunt woman. She used to work out at Smash all the time.
Yeah, that's my sister's Southeast Movie and Stunt House, Smash. That's my sister. She's, my little sis.
No way. That is wild.
Do you know our family history? Do you know how we ended up here?
I've read a little bit about it at this point. Can you enlighten everybody?
Well, the reason my sister's a stunt woman is because, my family and I, we immigrated from the former Soviet Union in the 70s. And I was the last one to be born there in the USSR, Ukraine, as we know it today. I was born in Vinnytsia, Ukraine. And we were, one of the very, very lucky ones. We applied for a visa and only, a small percentage of families were able to escape. It was for family reunification. It was, part of the Soviet Jewry exodus, I believe started in the late 60s. So we were supposed to go to Israel and we kind of were dropouts of the program and ended up going through the Vienna and then Rome pipeline. I don't know if you're familiar with the history, but it was pretty common for a lot of people leaving the Soviet Union that the Jewish people that were able to get out. We were kind of stuck in Italy for about 6 months waiting for, our visa to be approved. And there's actually a documentary about this, which is very interesting. It's called Stateless, for anyone's interested in looking into that. But it tells the story of how difficult it was to come here legally, which we did do. It was just extremely difficult. And when our mom tells the story, she cries because, we were starving and it was really, really hard. But then, when we arrived in the U.S., we were the second family to arrive in West Hartford, Connecticut, and the Jewish community center there sponsored us and my sister was born, Elizabeth.
Wow.
She was the first one to be born here. I was the last one to be born in Ukraine. And then we have one more sister, Joanna, who is an incredible 2D animator, also lives in Atlanta. Yeah, so there's three girls. And the funny thing is, we ended up coming to Atlanta because the only thing that my parents knew how to do when we came to the States, because we didn't want to get on welfare for obvious reasons, you know, trying to get away from that whole system of communism and socialism. My parents wanted to work and nobody spoke English. We didn't have any connections. And so they did what they knew how to do. And we started a gymnastics school in Florida, which is kind of where we did most of our growing up. Yeah. And then, you know, the 96 games were happening in Atlanta. And my mom, she was an Olympic coach and for rhythmic gymnastics, which Elizabeth was really big into. I was mostly an artistic gymnast. I did a little bit of rhythmics. But yeah, she was awesome. We all three of us did really well in the sport, but that's how we ended up in Atlanta. It was around 1993 that my family moved here while I was actually serving in the US Air Force, believe it or not. Wow. So yeah, when I got out of the military, instead of going back to my home state of Florida, I came to Atlanta. And that's, you know, from gymnastics, I became a dancer and a dance instructor, and Liz went into stunts. That's a very, very, you know, short summation, but
wow, that's
I didn't know you knew her. That's wild.
I had no idea that she was your sister. My wife even saw your photo earlier and wasn't like, that looks like Liz.
So oh wow!
Yeah, so that's crazy.
I hope she'll watch this.
Yeah. Oh no, she's downstairs doing an interview right now, so she'll have to watch this later. That's gonna be so funny.
Well, later on, if we talk about the book that I just finished writing, Liz was a part of that. She helped me a lot.
Okay. So, awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, okay. So what a backstory.
That's so funny. We didn't realize that. I thought you were going to say Lolita because, you know, she's an actress and everybody asked me if I'm related to Lolita Davidovich. So
oh, interesting.
Maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah. I don't even know who that is. So I'm more familiar with Liz.
IMDb her. You'll see.
All right. Okay. So you started as a child and got into gymnastics, moved to Atlanta. And how did you find your way? Now you work for the Foundation for Economic Education.
Yes, we call it FEE, Foundation for Economic Education. I've been there. Next week will be 9 years.
Wow. Okay. And so can you tell me the journey from gymnastics and
All right. Well, let's see. Where do I begin? Honestly, so I was raised in a very entrepreneurial family and we had our family businesses growing up. And so business just kind of came second nature to me. I thought it was all common sense and, you know, the idea of entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial mindset. I didn't realize how unique that was. And it wasn't really taught in schools. Yes. Okay. So I guess I can tell you when I joined the Air Force, I was a Russian linguist initially, obviously, because Russian was my first language. Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to read and write because I was fluent speaking, but I went to the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California. And then I was stationed in Texas. And then after a year, I got a little frustrated just because the shift work is very difficult. I had to work day swings, mids, constantly changing shifts, which means it was impossible to go to school. It was it was really difficult for me to, you know, sleep. And anyway, long story short, I got out of the intel role and went into education. That's kind of how my journey in education started. And I started doing curriculum development and I created the first conversation course in Russian for the National Cryptologic School, which is like the training division for NSA and the Air Intelligence Agency. But I taught basic Russian and I, you know, did a lot of curriculum development for them. And then I got into pedagogy and I started teaching a course called Education 101, which is a course for anybody in the Department of Defense that wants to become an educator. So it's kind of like teaching how to teach. Okay. And they become adjunct faculty to where they can teach whatever subjects it is that they want to teach. So, I didn't, I don't know how much I should share. How personal should I get?
Entirely up to you.
Because, you know, if I don't go a little bit personal, the transition won't make sense. Like, how did I end up at then, it's because of my children. I'll just say that. Let's leave it at that. I ended up getting married and I had two children. And we moved close to where my parents were living. And this was in Sandy Springs. And they went to a charter school that was supposedly, you know, one of the top rated charter schools. Mm. And things weren't going the way that I thought they should be going in terms of education for my two children.
Right.
And so what does, you know, any mom do? She gets elected to the school board. That's what I did. I actually got involved in politics and I was precinct chair of mm-hmm. the Republican Party through this. There was like a Liberty Republican movement. There were a bunch of libertarians that were really trying to make change, especially in Fulton County and in Georgia mm-hmm. overall, kind of pushing for limited government and pushing for all the things that the Republican Party says they stand for, but don't really act that way. And that was very frustrating. And then after 2 years being on the school board and the local school advisory committee, there were some issues that we had to go through a process to get rid of some bad actors. I won't name names, but it was very difficult. And I realized, wow, my kids are basically being taught that everyone's a winner. And at the same time, there was some teacher abuse and other horrible things happening. And so after my 2 years were up and after we turned over the bad actors, it was time for me to go. So I left politics, I pulled my kids out and I ended up homeschooling them. And I actually did a combination, I call it hybrid schooling or car schooling, mm-hmm. experiential learning. We outsourced a lot. It was not easy. I was hoping to find a good school for them, but there just wasn't anything at that time. And this was, I want to say 2010.
Okay.
And so being Jewish, everyone kept telling me, well, for your kids to find friends, you have to join a church. And I said, no, that doesn't work for us. And I was surprised that there weren't any other communities that were available outside of churches. And so I started a homeschool group on Facebook called Atlanta Secular Homeschool Group, just to find a few friends for my kids. Mm-hmm. And I think there's 2,600 families now on that. Wow. And that, I mean, it just shows there's a huge need and demand for community. For people who want to homeschool or they want to get out of the government school system for reasons outside of religion. I mean, there are religious people there too, but that's mm-hmm. not the focal point. The point was, how do we give our kids the best education possible? And so with my business, you know, background, I started negotiating with local businesses to bring families in at discounted or free rates for different things. Like, we did glass blowing and we did behind the scenes tour at radio stations, TV stations. We did rock climbing every week, lots of activities. I really believe in experiential learning and let kids try all the different sports and all the different, you know, arts and everything. Like, let them see the world. And it was a lot of fun. And that's why I call it car schooling, because we left early in the morning. Usually I pack a big cooler and off we went all day to different co-ops. Another example, there was a co-op in Decatur we did, because when my daughter wanted to start taking biology and dissecting things, mm-hmm. I just wasn't okay with that. I think I'd faint. She wanted to dissect things. I'll just leave it at that. So I outsourced that. And also trekking. I'm not a big camper. So she went and did overnight treks up the Appalachian Trail with one of the groups. I mean, it was really great to have those kinds of opportunities even back then, but I did so much research and today there's even more and more opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then because of my, I do have an MBA in entrepreneurship. Not that that means anything. I probably did more of the teaching than learning when I got it. But I did go to the public library and I opened it up to the public, to the community. And I was teaching entrepreneurship and personal finance and economics. Mm-hmm. And I was initially using junior achievement materials. And this was the Sandy Springs Library. And they started asking me to come back more and more. And I was writing my own curriculum because I wasn't thrilled with junior achievement back then. They're better now, I'll say. They actually use some fee resources and they've become more free market friendly. But back then, that just wasn't doing it for me. And they said, that's fine. Just let them know how many kids were in the class. And I kept doing it. And that's when everything came together and Fee found out what I was doing. And they were looking for a curriculum developer. And I was homeschooling my kids. And I said, you know, I can do this if I can work from home because my kids are my priority. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's kind of how it happened. And I was the manager of the Character and Values Initiative, which was, you probably know, Larry Reed. You know, then the focus is really on character and having strong personal character and personal responsibility as the foundation to everything that we try to teach at Fee.
Wow. Okay, going back just a little bit. It sounds like, so one of the big misconceptions that I've found with homeschooling kids is that they don't get socialized and it's not going to be well-rounded and they're just going to be stuck in this pigeonhole. It sounds like your kids got a very well-rounded education and got to see a lot of things. What would be your advice to a parent who doesn't necessarily have like the imagination or the drive that you might have had or the time in order to make that homeschooling experience more well-rounded?
Right. So since I've been doing that, I've helped a lot of parents leave their schools. Like they're not happy, whether it's a government school or a very high cost private school that's like super, super progressive, or, you know, parents have been unhappy for as long as I've been a mom. I just continue to have these conversations. And I'll say, I know homeschooling isn't for everyone. I did it as a single mother, and I know it can be done. You know, I'm proof. And now there's even more opportunity out there than there was back in 2010. Mm-hmm. And the word homeschooling is like a trigger for a lot of parents. It terrifies them. They think they don't know enough. You don't have to know. You can learn right alongside your kids. And, you know, by joining a group like the one that I started, or there's so many out there, the support that you get, as especially as a new homeschooling parent, mm-hmm. is overwhelming. People are just like pouring and wanting to help. But what I was going to say is now there with all the ESAs, and those are education savings accounts, but we don't have it in Georgia. But the point is, because there's this education revolution happening, thanks to the silver lining of COVID, I'll say, more and more parents are really looking at finding alternatives. And one of the things that we're seeing more of, where I used to call it homeschool co-ops, now they're called learning pods and micro schools and hybrid schools. So there's so much out there. You don't necessarily have to technically homeschool your kids. You can put them in one of these other programs. And we actually are really lucky in Georgia. We have a department. It's through Kennesaw State University.
Okay.
Eric Wern, he, I want to say 3 years ago now, started the National Hybrid School Project. And it's here in Georgia, and people from all over the country and even all over the world come, and they're learning more and more about these hybrid options where kids can just go to school 2-3, you know, however many days a week. It's more flexible. You can customize it. They do distance learning or, you know, online learning, on-demand learning. There's so many more options popping up that you have access to. So I would say, if you don't want to homeschool, you don't have to homeschool. There are so many options now. And one of the things I'm trying to do to help parents, because I don't have time to consult, you know, with every single parent, is putting together a website called findabetterschool.org. And that's just like a directory of alternative schools state by state. So I'm still working on that. Hopefully I'll launch it in 2 to 3 months. But it's something that I think is desperately needed. Especially as the states are passing legislation for education savings accounts where money follows the child. So mm-hmm. as a parent, if I'm in a state where that legislation has passed, great. What are my options? The money follows the child. I pull them out of the district, you know, government school. Now what? What are my options? So that's what I'm trying to do and help parents. And obviously I'm going to start with Georgia because I know it best. And then I'll probably mm-hmm. go to Florida and expand state by state.
That's awesome. And yeah, that is definitely the hardest thing, is that first step, just like pulling your kid out of school mm-hmm. and then trying to know what to do next. And so like having a resource like that imagine would be very, very important.
But you asked about socialization. I just want to say to me, it's the exact opposite. So with my kids, for example, I think their socialization skills are better than government school kids because I never put up with, you know, tantrums or screaming or like, it was the bottom line. It's about mutual respect. You respect children. They respect you. It's mutual. And I remember getting comments all the time from parents. My kids did a lot of sports. So they'd spend the night or they'd go on sports, you know, trips for competitions. And the parents would say, wow, your kids are so mature. They look into my eyes when they talk to me. They're just like so grown up. And I'm like, you know, they're just people. They're smaller people, but they're respectful. And yeah. And it does make it hard for them to socialize with kids that were raised in a different environment because they're loud. My son would always get headaches at school. He's like, mommy, why are kids always screaming? I said, I don't know, baby. But, you know, I think it's not even a non-issue. I think they're better off when they're not in a government school.
Yeah, completely agree. You mentioned how many, like micro schools and all these different kinds of options popping up. And in your paper, you said over 1 million students are currently attending a micro school, which generally aims to instill a love of learning that's customized and geared towards meeting the individual child's unique needs. Right. I think it's important for people to know that like this is being done on a regular basis by parents all over the country. I think not feeling alone, you know, and pulling out your kid, like not feeling like you're the only one doing this. You're the weird one. Like what you're going to mess up your child's future. I think that's a really important thing when talking about this kind of
stuff. I said, I wasn't looking to homeschool my kids, but as an educator, I could not sit by and watch them. And I would rather have unschooled them than let them stay in that environment because it's detrimental. What's being taught to children today is dangerous.
Yeah.
But I do want to tell you, there are two resources if anyone's interested in learning more about micro schools. Mm-hmm. We actually, my colleague at FEE, Carrie McDonald, she has a newsletter and coming out with a book. But her newsletter, if you go to fee.org, her newsletter is called Liberated.
Okay.
And she actually goes around the country and she's compiling a list of all these micro schools and all these education entrepreneurs that were in a similar situation that I was in. And they said, okay, well, I want to be able to help meet the needs of the community. And I'm going to start a micro school, which, you know, you could start with two kids or five kids, and then you grow as big as you can or want to grow. And so we have, yep, that's the one. And there are a lot of, micro schools even in Georgia. So I toured a few of them already and these things are just popping up everywhere. And the other resource is the National Micro Schooling Center. So if anyone wants to come to the National Hybrid School Project conference, which is going to be in April, I can send you that information. I just need to look it up. Cool. But I know it's sometime in April, the one that's hosted by Eric Wern at Kennesaw State University. They're, you know, one of the main speakers and can answer lots of questions for people nationwide.
Okay, awesome. Well, let's talk about FEE for a minute and your involvement with FEE, because economics is that's what I love to talk about the most. That's kind of my thing, especially when it pertains to the Federal Reserve and Bitcoin and all that kind of stuff. what is your... I mean, I guess I can show your job title. What do you do at FEE?
Oh, I've done many things. Well, like I said earlier, I started out as curriculum development. It probably took me about a year. And the idea with the Character and Values Initiative was to teach the morality of capitalism in a way that, you know, could be used in schools. So obviously it's not going to be a religious thing, but, you know, capitalism is the only moral way where let me backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
Instead of it being focused, one of the things that I did, instead of focusing on economics only, you have to have a hook. You have to have a way to like hook people in, teachers, students, parents. And we realized that the idea of entrepreneurship does that. Everybody wants to understand the entrepreneurial, I mean, pretty much everybody I've talked to loves learning about the entrepreneurial mindset. And the idea is you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to start a company, but you can also be an entrepreneur if you keep your eyes open, ears open, and learn how to improve upon a product or a process. That's still being entrepreneurial. So we decided to go with the economics of entrepreneurship as the first course at Fee. And if you go to fee.org/courses, you'll see all the courses there. The EOE, Economics of Entrepreneurship, is the longest course because it's a full semester long and it has 8 modules. So we do end up towards the end getting to how, the philosophy behind free market and free enterprise. So there it is, module 1, Economics of Entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I actually taught that to my kids when they were 10 years old. This is meant for high school, but I think kids that can read well, that can reason, I think you can start this at a middle school level, no problem. But that's kind of how it started. And then what happened was it took a year. I co-authored it. And then after we finished it, okay, now what? Basically, because it's a full semester long, schools can't use it, right? So we went out into the homeschool community and they loved it. And we went to homeschool conferences all over the place. And I actually employed my mother and my 2 children. At that time, Fee was really small. We didn't have that many people. We definitely didn't have an outreach department. Yeah. So I started, selling it at no charge, but getting it out there, doing outreach. So I essentially created an outreach department at Fee. And that's just because the idea of a lot of these think tanks around the country, they come up with all these great products and programs, but they're pushing out something that they don't necessarily know is needed or wanted by consumers. So what I think is really important to do is to get out there and listen and understand what's needed before creating, products. So I learned a lot with this. And I would say what Fee is doing now, one of the things I did because of this course, I wanted teachers to kind of take a look at it and give me feedback if it's helpful, if they can use any parts of it, understanding that they can't implement an entire course, but they can use parts of it to supplement what they're already teaching in the classroom. So I created the teacher advisory board, and I had a list of a dozen or so, maybe 16 teachers. Mm-hmm. And then when COVID happened, we decided to go ahead and create an online and on-demand platform where people could go to at any time, sign up at no charge and learn. So it's called the Learning Center. And the idea is, Fee goes out to classrooms all the time and teaches students, and the teachers are like, wait, can you zoom in and help me teach the free enterprise portion? Because I don't know how to do it. So there's no way we could do it, but we could create a platform to help them with it. So now, I guess maybe 3-4, I don't even know how many years now, but we do have the Learning Center, hired our top 2 teachers in that teacher advisory board. And now we have, I think, 3 or 4 people in that department. And that's what they do. They go out and they do professional development and teacher training. So we've really, that's how we've expanded. We have outreach, we have professional development. And I talk about that in my paper that the Educational Freedom Institute published on disrupting the coercive government school system. So one of the most important things we could be doing now is training teachers. So that's one element.
Yes. Yeah. And I was about to mention that. I was going to bring that up next is, disrupting the coercive government school system with market-based solutions, a 3-pronged strategy for incremental privatization through that's disruptive innovation. It's a mouthful.
Every word is necessary.
And you lay out the three prongs, which is policies of deregulation and encouragement of entrepreneurial competition, effective professional development of teachers, and de facto privatization as families leave the public system to take advantage of disruptive innovations and emergent order. And I'm going to put a link to this paper in the description, because for anybody out there, I read this whole thing and it's phenomenal. So you should, if you're interested, you should definitely take a look at it. Yes.
It's been called a manifesto, but I really could not shorten it because I just think that every element is important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is 100%. I have so many things highlighted. It's ridiculous. Basically, most pages are half yellow. the first thing I highlighted was the governmental school system of today, you said it often teaches them what to feel and how to memorize and regurgitate facts instead mm-hmm. of how to think. And I think I mentioned this. So I interviewed Meredith Hazel, who is Shane Hazel's wife, who ran for governor of the Libertarian ticket a couple years ago. And they've been homeschooling their kids. And one thing that we brought up in the conversation was that, like, NASA back in the 60s or 70s conducted a study where they wanted to get more geniuses because they wanted to figure out how to get more geniuses into NASA. And so they tested kids before, like, when they were about 5 or 6, and like 96% of them tested at genius levels. And then as they went through the educational system, by the time they got out of, I think it was into college or out of high school, that number had dropped from 96 to like 3%. And the way they defined genius was basically creative problem solving of different things. And so what I've found is that the education system is meant to basically crush creativity and make you very submissive to authority and like do your little part and don't think outside the box. And I think that's exactly what you said right here, which is it teaches them what to feel and how to memorize instead of how to think. And that's such a big deal, because how to think is how you should, like, that's the basis for your entire life is learning how to build one thing on top of the next and progress your life in a successful way.
I went through the system. I remember I'm a product of the public school system. I grew up in Florida. I don't know if you went through the public school system, but I remember how much I don't want to say I hated school. I just thought it was stupid and it was a waste of time because I didn't learn anything. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
I didn't see the relevancy. And that's, you know, back to when I mentioned that we kind of use entrepreneurship as a hook a lot of times when teaching economics, because you have to show your audience the relevancy, no matter what you're teaching, no matter what you're talking about. And so you have this system that's designed to create, you know, compliant workers. And I remember hating memorizing things. I hated history because I couldn't, it wasn't told in a story form where it made sense and why it mattered. Now, to me, the most important thing is history, because we're currently making the same mistakes that you know we can show in history, which is why I wrote the book on the dangers of communism and socialism. We're repeating history because it's not being taught. Like, literally, there's hardly anything in world history textbooks about the Holodomor, the genocide that happened through, you know, starvation in Ukraine in 1932, 1933, because of Stalin's 5-year plan.
Yep.
And, you know, I talked to his history professors, and some know about it, but think about the colleges of education. And we don't even have to go down that path, do we? The colleges of education, they're a major problem. They're the ones that are churning out the K-12 teachers, right? Yes. So that's why these alternative models of education are so important, not just for parents and families and kids, but for teachers also. There are so many good teachers out there that really want to teach well, but they can't when they're restricted in this government school system. So they're also looking for alternatives. And I think that's wonderful, because now they can teach at micro schools, they can do online tutoring. It's growing, and it just thrills me that it exists. I'm a little sad that it's happening after my kids are already grown and done, but hey, at least, you know, we're saving the next generation, hopefully.
Heck yeah. And at least you're one of the ones helping to do that. And you learned from educating your own children, what works, what doesn't work, how to, like, there's going to be great benefit to children that come after your children. So
I appreciate that. That's very kind. I try.
The first of the three-pronged approach was policy. Can you tell us a little bit about how to, because the government system is a nightmare to navigate and just a behemoth for a lot of people to even think about and very off-putting. Yeah. So how do you go about trying to get policy implemented or taken away in certain states?
That's such a good question. I have been spending more and more time observing what we're up against in policy, and it is such an uphill battle. And a lot of times we freedom fighters end up taking a reactive stance, which is never going to work.
No,
we're always going to be, you know, two steps behind, reacting, fighting for something. You have one win. It's like one step forward, two steps back. Yeah. So that's what I've noticed. So I think instead of being focused on any particular issue, I think it's more important to understand the fundamental issue that we have to stand up for and fight for, and that's parents' rights. So I would say two things. When it comes to policy, no matter what the policy initiative is it ultimately going to increase competition? Right? Mm-hmm. If we're getting the barriers out of the way and competition will increase, then that's going to be a win. So most of the time we need government to get out of the way. And that's one of the biggest problems we're seeing with the expansion of alternative schools, is that especially on the local level, there's a lot of pushback, because, you know, all you have to do is follow the money and you'll understand why the government school system is so protective. We're talking about a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And if people start shifting and going over to alternative educational options, and people are leaving the district schools, those schools collapse. They can't justify their existence.
Yes.
So you just follow the money, as my dad taught me when I was very little, follow the money and you'll have your answer no matter what your question is. So that's one thing. So definitely the barriers, they just keep multiplying. So if you go into why I'm not in policy, it would drive me crazy, because if I'm fighting for one thing, like to get government out of the way, to start my micro school, for example, mm-hmm. But as soon as that happens, there's going to be more and more coming right behind you, more barriers that are going to make it as difficult as possible for you to exist. So I would say the other thing about policy is beware of policy that initially sounds good, feels good. You have to read the fine print, because there are strings attached. When something is free, for example, oh, homeschoolers can now, you know, do sports at the public school. Where are the strings? So this is one of the problems in some states that are passing the education savings accounts. It's infringing upon homeschool laws, making it more difficult for people to educate their children as they see fit. So that's something to really look out for. And the legislation has to be very, very detailed, specific, and forward-thinking in terms of how things are going to be implemented.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you can pass legislation, pat yourself on the back and call it a win and get your votes. But guess what happens? You know, then it's like, oh, wait, how are we paying for this? Oh, let's create another layer of government. Yeah, that's what we want. No. So we have to be really careful with legislation, including the education savings accounts. So I do, and this is what I talked about in my paper, mm-hmm. although I think it is a step in the right direction, like we're moving towards privatization, but I call it incremental for a reason, mm-hmm. because I don't like the idea of creating new legislation, because there are strings attached, because it is a lot of times creating another layer of government. However, if it's done right, and from what I understand, I think West Virginia, I spoke with one of the senators there at the last ALEC meeting, and they assured me that there's no new funds going into the implementation with ESAs, that it's a legitimate shifting of the funds. And I'm like, okay, if you say so, we'll see. But that's what scares me about a lot of these, is I just don't want to see government grow, right, especially when they say, well, you know, we have to expand it to create an agency for the implementation of these ESAs or vouchers or whatever they may be. So you just have to be really careful with how it's written. So there are multiple, you know, issues with regard to policy. But the main thing is, you know, we have to keep fighting to keep government out of the way and get rid of those barriers to entry for education entrepreneurs.
Yeah. You definitely don't want them to just continue funding what they've always funded and then just add more funding to what you want, because then you're just creating more government and there's no oversight and you have no idea how much money they're spending. I liked one of the things you said in your paper, and you just mentioned parents' rights. I liked the first paragraph of your conclusion. I'm just going to read it. You said, it's interesting to note that there is little to no state intrusion on parenting prior to age 5 or 6, depending on the state. Parents are entrusted to educate their children, choose daycare, doctors, and so on. Why all of a sudden at a certain children's age do some people think that parents are no longer capable or should be allowed to educate their own children? Why at a certain children's age are parents burdened with compulsory school and truancy laws? Yeah. I think people get so ingrained in tradition and routine and just saying things like this is how it's done, like this is how we do it, that they don't even consider that very subtle little transition from when they're, you know, 4 or 5, not in school, to when they're 6 and going into like first grade. I think people don't even think, like, even consider the possibility of an alternative education to public education. Is that something that you've found?
So many comments. I do think that parents' rights, that's the fundamental issue we have to really watch out for, mm-hmm. because it's already happening. Parents are already losing their rights. If you look at what's happening in California, and 2 days ago I was in Colorado, mm-hmm. and what I saw blew my mind in a really bad way. I'm terrified to see what is already happening in states where parents don't have the right. The schools, the government, the teachers, whoever, they don't have to notify parents, for example, if your daughter or son wants to go and have a sex change. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. what? I'm sorry. I thought last time I checked, I was in charge of my child's, you know, medical and health.
Yeah.
But it's gotten out of control, and it continues to get out of control, which is why it's so important that parents understand there are alternative options. Yeah. And, you know, I personally am not one of those people who, you know, testifies and is involved in politics and policy, but I mention it in my paper because I am so grateful that we have all those foundations, the C4s, that really do the good work, mm-hmm. and they're just, you know, pounding away at ensuring that parents maintain rights to their own children. It's just, saying out loud sounds crazy. How is it even an issue? But it is, and it's getting worse, and it's absolutely terrifying to know that, and it doesn't matter what the issue is, that is the fundamental concept that parents need to understand. Who has the rights to the children? Right. And if you don't like what's being taught, pull them out. There are lots of alternatives, but this last trip to Colorado, it was really eye-opening. I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize it was this bad. And one of my friends runs the Colorado Parent Advocacy Network and doing phenomenal work out there. There are a couple other organizations, but they're just following in the footsteps of California. So, you know, we're seeing a lot of people leave those states, especially California, as they become aware of what's happening. So what could be scarier as a parent than to learn that your child or the people supposedly, you know, taking care of your kids while they're in the schools are actually harming them and not notifying, and don't have to notify you.
Yeah, no, that's terrifying.
Yeah, and that's one of the times I'm like, whew, so glad my kids are grown up.
Exactly.
It's actually gotten a lot worse since my kids were in school. As bad as it was back then in 2005, 2010, it is considerably worse now. And
it seems to be accelerating at a
quickly,
maybe exponential pace. I don't know, but definitely a high rate of speed. Yeah. Well, Mariana, thank you for coming on this show. I really appreciate it. I think we could talk for a few hours.
I'm gonna have to get on a three-way call with my sister next. That's just crazy.
There we go. But yeah, is there anything you want to promote, you want to talk about before we get off this podcast?
Well, I mentioned the book. I haven't yet published it, but it should be getting published any week now, hopefully. But it's called The Buried Stories of Communism and Socialism. It's a historical primer and a contemporary analysis. Basically, it's a very short overview of atrocities against humanity in the 20th and 21st century in the name of communism and socialism, as we all here probably know that that's what it actually is. You know, most people don't know what USSR stands for.
Oh boy.
And it's the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. They're like, that's not socialism. Yes, it is. So in the last portion of that book, I go into like a comparative analysis of how those atrocities happened, what led to them, and show that there are similarities happening today. So hopefully, and that's a book that I was asked by some people over in Florida at the Department of Education. We've been doing the victims of communism, and there's new legislation now in order to teach the history of communism. So that's part of the professional development that I talked about in my paper that I'm personally helping with. And that's really just to make history more accessible and I guess more digestible for the current population. I'll just leave it at that. It's very short, has lots of pictures.
There we go. Perfect. My kind of,
but yeah, I'm enjoying all the projects and everything that I'm doing at FEE. I just oversee all of our partnerships. So if there's any groups out there that are interested in partnering, or have any events, for example, I oversee all of our events. We do over 120 a year all over the world. So yeah, that's my external affairs job now. So
fantastic.
If you want to share my email, people can reach out to me, and happy to talk about any of these things.
Awesome. Yeah. There's going to be way too many links in this description, but they're all going to be there. You can find all of these resources, through the link, through the description below. But, yeah, Mariana, again, thank you. This has been fantastic. And I hope to have you on again in the future.
Sounds good. Happy to do it.
All right. And that'll do it for today's show, y'all. That was Miss Mariana Davidovich. You can go find her all sorts of places. We're going to have all of her links in the description of this episode. So you'll be able to look her up on a whole bunch of different sites, see all of her work on different projects, different things. So yeah, go do that if you're interested. That'll do it for this week. Next week we'll be back. Sorry, I'm going out of town this weekend. Couldn't remember if I was going to be back in town yet. But yes, next week, Free Georgia Podcast will come out 8 p.m. on Mondays, and Liberty Libations every 8 p.m. on Thursday, every Thursday at 8 p.m. My gosh. All right, y'all. That'll do it for today's show. We'll talk to you later. Peace.